David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and this is Stacy from The Advisor. Today, I'm very excited because we have a wonderful guest today on our show. His name is Harry Hirsch. He is an author, and he's a fabulous mystery writer, and he taught for many years at Harvard, and after retirement, he decided to go into mystery writing, and he has wrote a beautiful series of mysteries, and he's going to tell you a little about his journey, what motivated him, and the series and the books that he has written. And you're going to find this very interesting, very motivating, and very inspiring. And I'm honored to have you on the show, Harry. This Thank has you. Been a pleasure to have you on this show. Can you tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do?
Yes, and thank you for having me. I grew up in Chicago. I was born in 1952. Long time ago, if you can believe that. And I went to the University of Michigan as an undergraduate. And then I got a PhD in political science at Princeton. So for 40 years after that, I taught political science first at Harvard and then at the University of California, San Diego. And then at McAllister College in Minnesota. And for the last 15 years, I've been here at Oberlin in Ohio. And of course, I did academic scholarly writing during those years. But I had always loved fiction, and I've always been a great reader. And I had always thought that when I retired from teaching, I might try my hand at fiction. Mm-hmm. And then, as it turned out, my last semester of teaching before retirement was the spring of 2020, which is, of course, when COVID hit.
Right.
So like everybody, I was on lockdown. And all my plans for what I was going to do, like a lot of people, went out the window. I was going to move and I was going to travel and do all these things. And I needed something to do. Mm-hmm. And the origin of the mystery series, it's kind of an interesting story. The series is called the Bob and Marcus Mysteries. Bob and Marcus are a gay couple. Mm-hmm. Marcus is an academic like me. Mm-hmm. And the first novel is called Shade. And it's set at Harvard in the 1980s, where I was. And back then, when I lived in Boston and I was at Harvard, I had discovered a little resort on the coast of Maine, about 90 minutes north of Boston, mm-hmm. called Ogunquit, Maine, which is this lovely, quiet town with a beautiful beach. And I would go up there for a couple of weeks every summer. Being an academic, what would I do? I would sit on the beach and I would read.
Yeah.
And since it was vacation, I would read some books in my field, but I would also read some fiction. Yes. And in the summer of 1984, so literally 40 years ago, mm-hmm. I discovered the mystery novels of Amanda Cross. Mm-hmm. And Amanda Cross was the pen name of Carolyn Heilbrunn, who was a very distinguished professor of English literature at Columbia in New York, one of the first women to be tenured at Columbia. And she wrote a series of novels, and her detective was a professor of literature at Columbia, like herself. And I loved most of the novels. A lot of them were set in academia. But that summer in 1984, I read a bunch of them, and most of them were great, but there was one that I didn't think was very good. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting on the beach with some friends, and I finished this one novel, and I sort of slammed it down on the sand, and I said, well, we could do better than that.
Yeah.
I just didn't think the plot was very good or suspenseful. So my friends and I are sitting there, and we just sort of started brainstorming a plot about a student at Harvard who gets murdered. I was mm-hmm. at Harvard at the time, and so were some of my friends. And just for fun, I took some notes. And I put the notes away. And I went back to my job of being an academic. Mm-hmm. And I didn't look at the notes for decades. And then in the summer of 2020, when we're all on lockdown and I was retired, I looked at the notes for the first time in a long time. And I said, you know, this really might work as mm-hmm. a mystery novel. So I read a bunch of books on how to write fiction, which I had never done before, and a bunch of books on how to write a good mystery. And I started writing, and mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. And it came together, and that became the first novel. And I enjoyed it so much that I continued, and so far I've published two more. The second is called Fault Line, which is set in California in the late 80s, where I have my protagonists move to California, as I did in the 80s. And the third one, which just came out, which is also set in California, is called Rain. I found that I've really enjoyed writing fiction, and that's where these come from.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I addressed you earlier, I've always had a love for fiction writing, especially with a little mystery in it, a little adventure. You know, it always sparked my interest. Now, what motivated you to? Now, you said that you had read the book, the one of the last books in 1984, and that wasn't that great, and you felt like you could do a better job. Was that the main motivation that really drew you, or was there something else inside you that made you really want to write these series and or just begin the series?
Yeah, well, in the first novel, Shade, Marcus is an assistant professor at Harvard, as I was. So there's some of me in Marcus.
Yeah.
And one of his students is murdered. And the student's family, very well-connected, wealthy family, asks Marcus to look into the student's murder. Mm-hmm. And in the course of his investigation, he meets Bob, mm-hmm. who at the time is about to go to law school. And they become a couple. And the first novel is set in the 1980s. The second one is set in the late 80s, 1989. The third one that just came out is set in 1994. The next one, which I'm currently working on, is set a little bit later. Mm-hmm. So part of my motivation was to chronicle the changes in gay life over time.
Right.
And also to work in political changes over time. In the second novel, Fault Line, Marcus and Bob have moved to San Diego, where I lived. Marcus is teaching at the University of California there, as I did. Bob mm-hmm. becomes an assistant district attorney in San Diego. And he is thrust into the investigation of the murder of the mayor's spouse, the San Diego mm-hmm. mayor's spouse. Since my field is politics, mm-hmm. and I taught courses that were law related, constitutional law, American thought.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
The novels gave me not only a chance to comment about gay life and how it changes over time, but also to use my knowledge of the law and of politics in a way that's different than the way I used it in scholarly writing.
Right.
When you write fiction, you can give a lot of opinions.
Yes.
You can make comments about political parties or political developments in a way that you can't really in scholarly writing.
Right.
So that was part of the motivation. And I'd say the third factor was to be able to comment on academic life.
Mm-hmm.
University life, academic life, in a way that, again, you can't really do in scholarly writing.
Right.
So since Marcus is a professor and he continues as a professor in different environments, mm-hmm. That gave me a chance to comment on what universities are like.
Yes.
In the first one, it's what the Ivy League is like and what those pressures are like. In the second one, it's a large state university and what that's like and so on. So there were multiple things that drew me to writing fiction. But I'd say the biggest factor is that it's fun. It's just really fun to use your imagination and invent characters and put them in difficult or dangerous situations and see how they deal with it and to solve a murder.
Yeah.
And the great thing about murder mysteries is that you have the basic structure of the plot is clear. Yeah. Who did it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why? You know, at base, every murder mystery is about that.
Yes.
So you have a structure to go into.
Now, did you with these series, did you leave like a little bit of a cliffhanger, or did you kind of make each series its own story?
Yeah, each one can stand on its own and be read on its own, but I also left clues.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes characters who go from one to another. So for example, in the second one, there is a police detective that gets involved in the investigation. And by the third one, he's become a private investigator and he becomes a more important character. So I have left clues from one to the next. And I've also, one of the nice things about having characters who, Bob and Marcus, the main characters, is that I can comment on their relationship
mm-hmm.
and how they get together, which happens in the first one.
Right.
And how they develop as a couple and how they change as people. Because people do change over time.
Yes, they do.
So there's both continuity and change from one novel to the other.
Now, you also had mentioned that you know, one of the focuses was emphasizing certain issues of how gay relationships have changed over the course of the years and how the political life of our country has changed as well. Like, what have you noticed from your own opinion of the changes that have occurred from the moment when you started the books to now in the current book that you have written?
That's a really interesting and complex question. The first one is set in 1985, which is, of course, the height of the AIDS crisis.
Right.
So that is very much on the minds of Bob and Marcus as they become a couple.
Right. And
develop a relationship.
Yes.
Part of what the first one is about is the stiffness of the Ivy League, and the not entirely acceptance of
yes.
gay faculty members in the 1980s in the Ivy League. I think it has changed considerably since then. But since I experienced that, and I know other gay faculty members experienced that, it was something that I wanted to write about. So as time has gone on, Marcus has found academic life to open up in terms of acceptance. And in terms of the politics of the era, I gave Bob a brother, an older brother in Los Angeles, who is very involved in Democratic Party politics. So that gave me a chance to talk about the changes in the Democratic Party over time, which were profound. And you know, Bill Clinton and Hillary in the 1990s really did reorient the Democratic Party.
Right.
Following my characters over time gave me a chance to talk about that.
Yes.
And then, the third novel is set in the early 1990s when the Republican Party is ascendant. So it gave me a chance to sort of comment on changes in national politics over time, 80s, 90s, the next one coming in the first decade of the 21st century.
Right.
Was certainly part of my motivation in wanting to do a series was chronicling not just the changes in gay life or the life of a gay couple, but changes in the country over time.
Have you felt that with today's society, our current political society, how people view the gay life and they view politics in general, have you seen an improvement, or do you feel that that we're still stigmatized and we're still stuck in with a lot of thoughts that are kind of hindering and hurting people as a whole in our country?
Well, there's no question that there's been a sea change over time in terms of the acceptance of LGBT folks. No question. There has been increasing acceptance. 70% of Americans now say they endorse gay and lesbian marriage. I mean, that would have been unthinkable.
Right.
In the 1980s.
Yes.
At the height of the AIDS crisis. So there has been enormous change, no question. And I've noticed that among my students.
Yes.
Here at Oberlin, I've had a lot of gay, lesbian, transgendered students. And for a lot of them, coming to this kind of accepting environment, this is the first time that they've been in that kind of environment. And I can see how they change as people and how important it is to be in a nurturing environment.
Oh,
at the same time, I think there are pockets of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly see that in the transgendered backlash in the Republican Party today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as somebody said, today transgendered people are like communists were in the 1950s. They are the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, the Republican Party has decided that this is a winning issue. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is.
Yeah.
Maybe there are places in the country where it is.
Mm-hmm.
But they have decided to put their eggs in that basket, at least for the time, for the time being. So I think things have changed dramatically. But there are still issues, and there are still LGBT people.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion, capital at risk.
Who get beaten up, mm-hmm. and murdered,
mm-hmm.
and discriminated against, and lose their jobs.
Yeah.
Or LGBT teenagers who get kicked out of their homes and end up on the street. There is still discrimination in courts over custody.
Mm-hmm.
If one of the partners is gay or lesbian or transgendered. Yeah. Not everywhere, not in every state, not in every court, but it still happens. One of the courses I taught was called Gender, Sexuality, and the Law.
Mm-hmm.
And we would read a lot of those cases. And my students were often dumbfounded
mm-hmm.
at how discriminatory courts could be against a gay parent, a lesbian parent, a transgendered parent.
Mm-hmm.
It was eye-opening for them, but it was also important for them, I think, to be familiar with that.
100%, 100%. I feel like, you know, there might be two aspects to this where one, what people don't understand or don't know, they fear. And two, the environment they grew up with. If you psychologically look at it from a psychological point, if you grow up in an environment, your parents teach you a certain way of thinking, a certain way of doing things.
The church.
The church. I was just going to say that. This is your religion. This is the way you're supposed to act. This is the way you're supposed to do things. And subconsciously, people don't want to let their parents down. They want acceptance and love from their parents. Even if their parents are gone, in the back of their head, subconsciously, they feel that they need to honor the environment that they grew up in, the way they were taught. This is the way it's supposed to be. And then it cycles, just like dysfunctionalism cycles, it snowballs. So then they go into their generation with these ideas of the environment they grew up in. And even though it may not be the right environment, it may not be the right choices, it's the way they were taught. And they psychologically don't want to disappoint the people that they love prior in their relationship. And I think those two things might be two important factors. What is your intake? What do you feel with those two statements?
I mean, I agree. I think. I mean, when I was growing up, every religious establishment condemned
mm-hmm.
homosexuality. It mm-hmm. was defined as mental illness
mm-hmm.
until in this country until 1973.
Wow.
By 1973, I was almost finished with college.
Right.
So I grew up in an environment where, and it was also against the law, of course.
Yes.
In every state of the union.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in an environment where there was just no space available.
Mm-hmm.
Political space, cultural space, to be gay.
Right.
But it started to change because people came forward.
Yes.
A very courageous generation came forward
Yes.
And fought back. And that's a story that's been well told now. And all of the research, all of the social scientific research shows that what most changes people's attitude is knowing a gay person, knowing a lesbian, knowing someone who is transgendered, seeing
Yes.
that they are a person, that they're capable of doing a job,
Yeah.
That they're not sick, they're not criminals, they're not crazy, they're just people
Yes.
who happen to have a different orientation to their sexuality or their gender.
Yes.
And all of the research supports the idea that people have to come out because that's the only way things change. And they have. They have
Yes.
for a lot of people, but not everyone.
No.
And unfortunately, I mean, I today I think because the Republican Party has decided that the evangelical church is its voting base. They are stuck in the 1950s.
Yes.
For example, the things J.D. Vance has been saying about, you know, people who don't have children or I mean, it's just, it's insane.
Yes.
But clearly it has resonance with some voters.
Yes.
Or he wouldn't be saying it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I feel in some areas of our country, we went backwards, but then in other areas, we have gone forward. And I think over time, like I had mentioned to you, I think they will be huge changes, you know, as the new generation starts to populate and their thoughts start to evolve and they start teaching their children, we will see a huge change in our country. But right now we are stuck where they are some areas, you know, in our country where people are still thinking, like you said, the 1950s. They are going back and they are, you know, looking back at certain things a certain way. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the religious part aspect of it, but there is nowhere to be found that in the Bible that they condemn gay, being gay or being transgender, you know, and this has been going on for thousands of years. But, you know, we cannot change the minds of the people. They have to change their own minds. And until you walk into other people's shoes, you really shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't judge. And then the Bible tells you not to judge. So let's not judge individuals. Let's look at ourselves and take care of who we are and do what makes us happy. But let's not push our beliefs on other people, you know, is how I feel.
Right, I agree completely.
Now, I just want to, you know, to get off the subject a little bit, you were telling me that you have a new book coming out that you are working on right now. You're in the process of working on a new book for the series.
The next book in the series, which is called Winter, I'm just finishing it, and that will be out the first of next year.
Okay.
So beginning of 2025. It's still Bob and Marcus. It's a little bit later.
Yeah.
It's the early 2000s.
Okay.
For the first time, they're hitting some bumps as a couple. They get over the bumps, but it happens.
Yep.
As I think I mentioned, there are sort of minor characters that I've been able to bring forward. So, for example, in the first one, in Rain, Bob has a young nephew who lives in Los Angeles.
Right.
And by the fourth one, the one that's coming out next year, the nephew is now a college student, and he becomes part of the story.
Oh,
So
wow.
that's one of the joys, really, of writing a series, is that you can carry characters forward, see how they change. People get older, as they do. Happens to all of us. Life changes in various ways. So, for example, in the second one, Bob is an assistant district attorney. In the third one, he's in private practice. In the fourth one, he'll still be in private practice. There are changes in Marcus's career. So there are changes, although I've written, as I said, I've written each one that I think it can stand on its own as a murder mystery.
Right. For people who there are so many people out there that want to write a book, whether it be a mystery or whether it be a nonfiction book. But for you, it could writing a book could be very difficult, but there could be ways where you could break it down to make the process easier and less stressful. For people who really would love to write a book, especially a mystery book or a series of books, do you have some advice for them on how they could begin and how to make the process a little less stressful?
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
As I mentioned, I read a bunch of books on how to write and how to write fiction and how to write mysteries. And there are some very good ones out there. So if you go to your local bookstore and to the it would be in the how-to section, nonfiction. There's some really good ones. There is a book with a great title called Naked, Drunk, and Writing. And if somebody wants to start writing, I would make that one of the first books I read. And there's also a book it's about memoir writing. And I had written a book about a memoir about my academic life called Office Hours, which came out in 2016. And there's a book by Vivian Gornick called The Situation and the Story, which is about how to write a memoir, but I think it's also very useful for anybody who wants to write fiction. And it's very short and it's very accessible. So I would recommend those two books. There's a lot of others like them. Anne Lamott has written a bunch of books on how to write. As I mentioned when we were talking before we started taping, the books about how to write fiction, all the advice often comes down to one central idea, which is establish a writing time 5 or 6 days a week, get your butt in the chair and keep your fingers moving. Just write it.
Yes.
Just start writing. And you may end up throwing away pages and pages and pages.
Right.
But if you trust the process, and if you really sit down and do it, even if you're staring at a blank screen for an hour,
Yes.
sooner or later, you will come up with a sentence or a paragraph or a character or an
Yes.
idea that works and that tells you where you need to go. And it really does work.
Yeah.
In fiction, you have to trust the process of writing. It's very different than scholarly writing. Scholarly writing, the work happens before you sit down to write, mostly. Right. The work is reading the literature, gathering information, gathering data, whatever your data might be.
Right.
Doing an outline. Then you sit down to write it up. And the writing is important, but it's not the most important thing.
Right.
With fiction, it's the other way around. I mean, you can start with an outline. You may want an outline as you go along. But the work is in the sitting down and just doing it.
Yeah.
And there are certain conventions in mystery writing.
Yeah.
There's a famous saying about Chekhov's gun, Anton Chekhov, the great Russian playwright, who's, and he was talking about playwriting, but the same thing applies to mysteries.
Right.
And he said, if a gun appears in act one, it has to go off by the end of act three. So that there's certain sort of rules for the road like that
yes.
you'll pick up as you go along and as you read the books about how to do it. And the other thing is, don't be afraid to show a draft to people whose opinion you respect.
Right.
And get feedback about your work as you go along. Maybe when
yeah.
you have half of the novel written or whatever. You know, find people who do a lot of reading and ask them to take a look at it. And mostly people are very happy to do that.
Yeah.
There are also a lot of writing courses online you can take if you feel like you need that kind of structure. The Iowa Writing Workshop, University of Iowa Writing Workshop, very well known, gives a lot of workshops. Some of them are on weekends, some of them are a week long during the summer, some of them are online. So there's a lot of resources out there.
Right.
Once you start looking. But the most important thing is just sit down and write.
Yeah.
It may sound stupid, but no. it actually is very profound. You know,
yes.
If you just sit down every day and write,
right,
it'll come.
Mm-hmm.
Characters will come, situations will come, ideas will come, images will come, and they will carry you along.
I love it. That's great advice. That's great advice. Now, if you had to take today's conversation and you wanted to summarize it and maybe give some important factors of the conversation we had today, what are some things you'd like to emphasize to the listeners today?
Read my books. Read my books, you'll love them. Actually, to be, I mean, of course I want people to read, every writer wants people to
yeah.
read them.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
One thing I'd say is that even though that my detectives, my main characters, are a gay couple, I've written them in a way that I hope is interesting to any reader,
right?
Whether they're gay or not. There's not a lot of graphic sex. People don't have to worry about that. There's a little bit here and there.
A little spice.
But I've really tried to make them appealing to any reader, certainly any mystery reader.
Right.
There is a Facebook page for the Bob and Marcus Mysteries you can go to. I also have a website. It's HN Hirsch, HNHIRSCH .info. And that lists the books. They're available at Amazon, Barnes and Noble. They are available in Kindle editions. So I really hope some of your listeners will give them a chance.
Well, they sound phenomenal, and I'm definitely going to be one of your readers. They
Thank you.
sound amazing. Now, where can people contact you if they want to find out more about you, more about the books? Where can people go?
On my website, hnhirsch.info, there's information about me. They can also sign up for my mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
And I will send them new information as new books in the series come out. So far, I've been publishing about one a year, which is, I think, how it will go. And as I say, the fourth one will be out beginning of 2025, sometime in the late winter, spring. And I hope to keep going. I hope people will give them a chance.
They sound wonderful. It's been amazing to talk to you. I love the stories. I love the plots behind the stories. I love how, you know, what motivated you to write the stories, and, you know, and how you continue to, you know, make goals to set new ideas for, you know, a continuation of the series. And also the advice you gave was phenomenal. I love, you know, there's so many people out there that want to write a book, but they don't know where to begin, or they're afraid to, or they don't know what it involves. And, you know, you've actually made it very clear that it's not as difficult as it sounds. It's time consuming. It takes thought and it takes, you know, energy, but you can do it.
You have to have a devoted writing time.
Yes.
Now, it's not going to be every day for 2 years. You know, it might be you work on it for 3 months.
Right.
Then you put it aside, and then you come back to it for another month. And then you know, as the saying goes, writing is revising.
Yes.
You know, Anne Lamott says every first draft is shitty.
Yes.
But you just have to get it down on the page.
Yeah.
Then you can go back to it and fix it.
Right. Exactly.
Best advice I can give to people who want to do it is just trust yourself.
Yes.
Trust yourself to do it.
That's excellent advice. That's excellent advice. This has been amazing. You know, I thank you so much, Harry, for coming
thank
on the
you.
Show. This has been an amazing experience. I hope you'll come back on the show and we can continue our conversation. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you very much. And thank you. Thanks to your listeners.
Well, you have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.